began so long ago with a band of Queen's Park men.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Spiders Talk podcast. It's David Blair, Callum Stewart and Enzo Tamarini back with you once again. Another couple of games to look at. We got to look back at our victory over Inverness last week, look ahead to the away day to Kirkcaldy to take on Raith Rovers, and there's plenty of news going on with Queen's Park. Some really big news about what's going to be happening to the tail end of this year, and some big news about a new face coming in at the beginning of next year. So we'll get on to that very shortly, but as we will start, as we always do, looking back at last week's game. It was at home through an Ockle View against Inverness Cali Thistle. It was a Saturday 5:30 kickoff, which is a new one for us. Certainly not been a kickoff time like that in a long time. Also, Callum, you couldn't make the game at all, but Enzo, how did you find that new kickoff time and how it shifted your day around as to what you would normally do for a football game?
Yeah, it was a little bit unusual, but I quite liked it, if I'm honest with you. I would much rather be playing at 5:30 on a Saturday than on a Friday evening. I know that maybe for some people it's a little bit awkward, but I don't know, it gives you a bit of time in the afternoon to do whatever else you want, whether that is actually something productive or just go for a few extra pints. But I thought it was all right.
Callum, I hope you managed to keep up with the game a little bit. Obviously, we're going to talk about it in detail here, but did you manage to make some time and keep in touch with what was happening, the flash scores updates?
Well, I managed to get some of the stream, actually, because the travel was a problem for me. So I managed to get up to about 75 minutes before I had to head out. So I got most of the good stuff in. But yeah, I agree with Enzo. See if you're choosing a time to be, if it can't be 3 o'clock on a Saturday, 5:30 isn't too bad, is it, objectively speaking, just so long as they tell us in advance.
Well, that's the problem, yeah. I think everybody, well, most people anyway, given the option, would probably rather slightly later on a Saturday. But the problem is, I think, and this was the issue for you as well, Callum, obviously, there wasn't much notice. So maybe people had plans for the Saturday evening after the game, or even assuming that the game was going to be on the Friday night, who knows?
But all credit to them on the stream, though, because I thought it was actually pretty good in terms of the actual quality of the picture. Obviously, we got used to the old Pixelot streams across the league and stuff like that. So I thought they did a good job in actually capturing the game, and it's certainly one of the better streams because they've got the replays and stuff like that on point right after anything happens in the game. So it was quite a good watch.
Yeah, I think we're one of the few clubs that didn't use Pixelot. We always had like an actual person using the camera, and yeah, we had the decent access to replays and stuff. It's good to see that despite the fact we hadn't been streaming games all season, despite other clubs continuing to do so, it's good to see that we kept that kind of better quality of stream up and it was available to folk. Let's look at what actually happened on the park and talk about how the game went. So first things first, obviously, we're going to look at the starting lineup, and there were a couple of changes from the defeat to Cove the week previously. So the starting lineup was as follows. It was Ferry in goals. It was Davidson came in for Bannon at right back. You had Lethal Day. And then you had Charlie Fox making his return from injury. So that's his first game in, I don't know, it's like mid-September, wasn't it? It was the Partick Thistle game, so it was maybe even earlier than that. So it's certainly been about 10 weeks or so, 8 to 10 weeks without first-team football. But he was back straight into the starting lineup for Stephen Ezzy, who it appears remains in the concussion protocols in some way, shape or form. We obviously hope he recovers from that as quickly as possible. So it was Kildare and Fox at centre-half and Tommy Robson at left-back. Thompson and Boateng in the middle. McPake, Jarrett and Dom Thomas coming back in after serving his suspension. He came back in place of Grant Savory and Simon Murray up front. In the match preview before the game, obviously Owen Coyle did mention there was going to be a couple of new names. There was a couple of injuries in the squad that allowed new names to come in. And we haven't really ran through the subs recently, but two names worth mentioning that were on the bench was obviously Cammy Bruce, who is the young left-back who looks poised for very big things, perhaps, in Scottish football, or maybe even beyond. And obviously young Lennon Connolly, who's been playing with young QP and doing quite well, scoring a few goals there. He also got onto the bench. And in terms of that starting 11, though, Callum, really, obviously we had the injury updates and players couldn't maybe come in for that, for example, with Eze. Aside from that, any complaints, anything you would have done differently?
No, I don't think so. When we discussed this last week, we talked about we were going under the presumption that Tommy Robson wasn't going to be available after he limped off. So it was really good to see him because he is a bit of a stalwart, and we had a bit of a debate last week about who would actually replace him. I think I suggested that I wouldn't mind seeing Bruce ahead of seeing like David Boateng or something like that back in. I think the only one that would really be up for potential for contention would be McPake versus Savory. Obviously, Savory came on and had a big impact. And just frankly, having Savory on the bench, just difficult to do, isn't it? I mean, he's been so good for the majority of the season since he got injured. So it's always a difficult call. But no, I think on the whole, I was pretty happy with the team. Davidson obviously coming back into the squad. I thought he had a really decent game. He looked pretty aggressive going forward. I think it was actually noticeable, having not seen him in the squad for a while, the impact that he has on that forward play. We've commented all year about how that is his strong point. Obviously, there's a few question marks defensively. And then Charlie Fox coming back in as well. If Eze wasn't going to be available, it was Fox that I definitely wanted to see. And he looked great. I mean, obviously, we'll get to the goals, and he perhaps has a role to play in Inverness's goal at 18 minutes. But I thought on the whole, he changed the dynamic of the team, and in a very positive manner.
Yeah, so I don't think I would have changed anything either, with the knowledge that that was the group of players that we had available. But I was very surprised to see Charlie Fox start, and I didn't think he was quite ready for it yet. And obviously in his post-game interview, he said that he was absolutely knackered, but he put in a hell of a shift considering how long he's been out of the first team. I agree that Davidson had a good game going forward. To be honest with you, there were a couple of moments where I think he was caught out when being forced to track back, and that's something that we've had some slight concerns about. But I still think Davidson's going to get better. And for me, again, personally, I would have probably liked to have seen Jarrett and Savory start. But Savory did well off the bench, and obviously he made Murray's winning goal. The defender was maybe a little bit unlucky to slide and let him pass him, but I think he was going to skin him anyway. So overall, it was an exciting lineup to see.
Yeah, it's good points there. And I will say, though, I mean, I'm becoming a fan of McPake on the left here. I don't know. Obviously, Grant Savory has been that good, but I'm going to have to stick up for him here as well. I mean, he, again, had another good game, particularly in the second half, and he'll probably still be kicking himself about the chance that he missed in the second half. I think that would have made it 2-1 at that point. An absolutely golden opportunity that he hit wide. But he's looked really good on the left, cutting in onto his right foot. Is that being a little bit harsh on him to say that we would have dropped him after two or three good games? I mean, the Cove game, maybe, okay, you could argue that one wasn't that great either, but he was still probably one of the better performers. He's been that good in the last few weeks. I think his position is, at this moment in time, justified.
I think it's a difficult one, and sort of born out of circumstance, maybe more than rather than reflecting his performances. Because I think Savory is a better football player, and he's demonstrated it. And I think the main difference between Savory and McPake for me, after seeing McPake out on the other side of the pitch, because I agree he is good at cutting in, but the main difference when you've got Thomas or Savory out in these wings is that they're just a wee bit more productive. McPake does do a lot of running, and he does have a lot of good opportunities, but that end ball, whether it be a cross or a goal, he had the one good game where it all came together for him, but I've still not seen enough of that end product yet to convince me that he would start ahead of either of those two sort of longer term. But it's good though. It's good that that is a hard decision now, because when McPake came in for a long period of time, it wasn't a hard decision. So in my head, it's really positive that we're sitting here thinking, oh, do we want McPake? Do we want Savory? Like, what way around is it? That sort of thing. So fair play to him. He has definitely stepped up his game, and that challenge on the squad is needed.
I don't think anybody would deny that McPake has clearly improved, but as you say, the game where everything did come together for him, let's be honest, the Thistle defenders absolutely invited those two shots on. Like, they made it, I don't want to say they made it easy for him, because the two finishes were fantastic, but had they shut him down a little bit better, then he probably wouldn't have been able to get those two shots away in the first place. But regardless, he's clearly improved. And even earlier on in the season, there were moments you could see that he is a talented player. He does have something about him. I just think overall we've seen more from Savory, and I think he offers more. And maybe McPake can be that one that comes off the bench and makes an impact, because those little cuts inside, or maybe even it might be easier for him to find himself in that situation when the defenders are starting to tire a little bit. They're not shutting him down quite as quickly. I'm not really sure what you think about that. But for me personally, I'd quite like to see I'd quite like to see that, that kind of attacking midfield trio of Thomas, Jarrett, and Savory, personally.
Yeah, it's, again, a fair point. And I wanted to play that little devil's advocate and stand up for a wee bit there. I do have to be honest, though. I think I agree. It was Callum that said that, just think he's like the better footballer in general. I think that's also fair. And I think we're also perfectly entitled to have our favourites. And I think Grant Savory is definitely, for the start of the season he had right up until his injury where he started missing a few weeks, he definitely was probably the consensus pick as everybody's favourite and everybody's favourite footballer in the team. So maybe we are a little bit biased or anything, but who knows? I just wanted to give Josh McPake a wee chance there. But in terms of the game, again, and in terms of making an instant impact, obviously Dom Thomas missed the game at Cove. He came back into the lineup, and within a minute, I don't think our black and white specs are that tinted, but he should have had a penalty in the first minute of the game, should he not? The ball comes from left to right. He picks it up on the right-hand side, runs into the box, runs inside the Inverness defender, and he looks like he gets a wee armful or two of his jersey. Maybe he makes the most of it going down, but the shirt pull's there. It's there to be seen on the highlights. Surely that is a penalty. Doesn't matter what time, what minute of the game it is. Surely that was a penalty.
I've watched it back a couple of times now, and on the night I thought it was a penalty, and I still do. I'm not really sure why the referee didn't give it. I do think that obviously the rules don't change over the course of a match, but I think referees are less likely to make such a defining decision so early on. I don't want to moan about the officials, right, because I'm going to be completely honest with you. I would never, ever have any interest in becoming a referee. I think it's a thankless task, but I wonder if possibly we might be seeing a little bit of a knock-on effect of VAR in the Championship, by the way, because what's now happening is the guys who were previously refereeing in the Championship are now up watching the videotapes and doing the VAR during the Premiership matches, and we're now seeing referees who are making the step up a little bit now. Listen, I'm not criticising the referee. Maybe he didn't have the best game. There was a couple of wee decisions I wasn't 100% sure about. But yeah, I think we need to be prepared for maybe seeing for some slightly more contentious stuff over the next few months, put it that way.
I agree. I think it was a penalty. It was pretty obvious. I think you're always just going to, refs just typically aren't going to do that at the start of a game. They're just not. I don't know why it is, but there's just kind of this sort of like 10-minute grace period in most games, isn't it? Where you can go in, stick a foot in, and you just get a finger wag and off you go. So yeah, I don't think he would have wanted to impact the game so much so early on. But if you place that in the 70th minute of the game, then I think it would have been a different story.
Yeah, definitely. It's a strange one. There's maybe a lot to it. I certainly hope we're not getting the knock-on effect of VAR in our referees, because I think it's fair to say in the Scottish Premiership, VAR is not having the greatest start to its life in Scottish football. Yeah, so it's certainly a strange one, and I don't agree with the ref's decision either. And I certainly hope, as you say, Enzo, that we are not seeing any kind of knock-on in terms of VAR, because it's not off to the best start in Scottish football, shall we say. And for as much as maybe the club harbour aspirations of going up or so, I certainly hope that if we ever come face to face with VAR, VR's actually gone from the game entirely. I'm not a fan in general, but that's a totally different topic of conversation for another day.
Well, so just to add fuel to your fire on that point, Enzo, I just had a quick look up of the ref that was looking after that game, and the majority of last season it was League One and League Two games that he was refing. So there is logic in that point.
There's something there then. Well, maybe that's one to keep an eye out on as we go. Maybe we'll have to start having a look at the
ref watch.
Who knows? We'll see what happens. We'll see if we feel that's justified at any particular point. But yeah, in terms of Queen's Park's performance, we started very well in the first minute there, and we kept going, and there was only really a few brief periods throughout the game where Inverness got chances and came into it. And that's reflected in the fact that Queen's Park had 82% possession, if you believe the figures on, I believe that was a figure on the BBC. I'm not sure if that was the one that was absolutely everywhere. But yeah, Queen's Park absolutely dominated the ball in this game. Dominated possession. We're creating all the chances. Simon Murray had a good chance early on where we've spoken about his goal drought so far, and he was played through by Dom Thomas, and he took the shot quite early on. It was quite far out. He probably could have ran even closer into the box and made it easier for himself, but he took the shot early. It was well saved by Cameron Mackay in the Inverness goal, and you just kind of thought maybe it was going to be another one of those days for Simon Murray, but we continued to go. Jarrett had another good chance not long after that as well. But as is the Queen's Park way these days, we're always going to give the opposition a chance or two. And unfortunately, when it comes to these chances or two, it usually leads to a goal. And that's exactly what happened on 18 minutes. It was Mackay, the big man up front, getting the goal for Inverness. It was played through, sort of like a lob through pass from the midfield. And it looks like Queen's Park defenders are playing like a high line and like an offside trap, if you will. But unfortunately, it seems that Charlie Fox wasn't aware. And he looks to be a few yards further behind. And Cal mentioned it right at the beginning of the episode when we were speaking about Charlie Fox. And he mentioned it himself in his post-match interview. He is shouldering the blame for that, where he was a few yards further back. That played Mackay onside. At the time, you don't really see it in the highlights, but at the time, Callum Ferry, it looked like he started to come out for the ball and then decided against it. And I personally, I feel like those few seconds maybe threw him off as well. But regardless, it was a good finish by Mackay. It was like a thumping finish at the near post. And for all that good attack and play in those first 18 minutes or so, in the two or three good chances, we were 1-0 down again.
Oh, it was deja vu, wasn't it? We were just kind of expecting... Well, I don't know if I was expecting it, to be honest. We did look pretty dominant, and you touched on the stats there for the overall game and 82% possession, but even aside from that, 19 corners that we had in that game. But yeah, it was a shame, like, for him to sort of have that wee error early on. But I think more credit to him for coming back from it. Like, you come back from a long-term injury, the first thing they do is be partly responsible for the goal. And then he goes on to have what, in my opinion, is a man of the match performance from that point on. So yeah, it was disappointing to start with, but lots to be encouraged about from that point on, especially because we came back to win. And I think you said, Enzo, that was the first time since, like, was it September 2020?
Or yeah, something it was like that, where we came it from. It was a game at Hampden where we beat Stenhousemuir 3-1, I believe. Simon Murray scored that night. It might even have been his first goal for the club. It might, because obviously he came in and didn't play much for the first sort of third of that season or something like that. I can't remember the specifics, but yeah, we found ourselves one goal behind and we ended up winning 3-1. And unless I've misread this, I believe that was the last time we won a game where the opposition scored first in the league. Anyway, in terms of the goal, the Inverness goal, I feel as though it was just what we saw there was a bit of rustiness, and that's to be expected when you've not played in such a long time. But the important thing is that he did hold his hands up and say, listen, that was me, and Coyle recognised it in his interview as well, which I thought was a little bit unusual, because Coyle doesn't tend to call out players, especially when they've had such an excellent performance. I don't know what the justification was for him feeling as though he had to mention that. But yeah, he turned that around. Obviously, he contributed with his own goal, and I would probably agree with you that he was one of the best players on the pitch. I have a question for you both, though. What do you think the reaction would have been had that been Stephen Eze, for example, who'd played the Inverness player onside?
I don't know why you're asking this question.
Why am I asking that question, David?
Because it seems like, once again, there's a bit of debate on social media and on Pye and Bovril as to... Well, as to our defensive options, which is, you know, great, and it's great that we have these defensive, you know, people that defensive options that can come in and can fill in pretty much between the three of them, much like we were talking about Savory and McPake and Jarrett earlier on. But it seems like people are intent on, I don't know, like completely fabricating scenarios in their head as to how bad Stephen Eze is or has been or things like that. I don't know. There's, yeah, comments on Pye and Bovril, people saying, oh yeah, Eze, even in that game alone against Inverness, Eze wouldn't have scored Charlie Fox's header, as we'll come on to talk about it later on. Eze would have done that mistake, you know, the same mistake as Charlie Fox. For me, I don't understand it. I think it would have been a case of if Eze had been the one 3 or 4 yards further back from the offside trap and had played Mackay on to score the goal, there would have been people at the game shouting dogs abuse at him. And I make no bones about it, I'm a massive fan of Stephen Eze. obviously, it goes without saying, as we've said multiple times in multiple weeks, we want every single Queen's Park player to play well when they do for us. But people are going to have their favourites. People are going to have players they don't like. But for me, for some reason, it seems like Eze has a lot of people that don't particularly like him for some reason, and I'm not really sure why.
So I think there's a few reasons why some people feel like that, right? So I agree. I think that Eze has had some bad games, as has literally every single player that's in that first team, right? I think part of the problem with Eze in comparison to Charlie Fox is the way that they play football, right? Eze is not pretty on the ball. I don't think he would pretend that he is. He looks slightly worried when he has the ball some of the time. And we have seen a few sort of pretty glaringly obvious errors. Aside from Charlie Fox's error in that game, the amount that he added to the rest of the match was wild. In terms of his competence on the ball, he obviously gets a goal himself. He's passing out from the back. There's a lot more there that, I don't know, breeds a bit more sympathy towards the occasional mistake, if that makes sense, because he adds so much more to the game. And I think with Eze, there might be less acceptance for that when he's surrounded by a team of really, really tidy players on the ball. Even Kilday's got better at it over the years. I think he stands out a wee bit more, whereas Fox fits the mould in terms of that nice ball-playing footballer that seems to be the norm in our team currently.
Even off the ball, you notice Fox quite a lot because he was very commanding on Saturday. He was like constantly giving instruction to his defence and the rest of the team as well. He's like a proper leader on the park, and it's impossible not to hear his voice pretty much throughout the entire 90 minutes. He's non-stop, and I don't think Eze necessarily has that side to him. He's quite quiet on the park, even though he's quite a big, imposing, physical guy. He's also, he's not much of a leader, and that's fine. I don't think he's been brought in to be a leader necessarily, but it maybe has an impact on his likability for some people. I know that might sound a little bit strange, but people do like this idea of the big commanding centre half that takes charge of situations. And if you've got a guy who is making the odd bad mistake, which he has done, he's had some excellent games as well, by the way. I think he's been a part of every single clean sheet that we've had. I think he started every one that we've had in the league. So it would be, I think it's harsh to suggest that he's not good enough for this level, which is what I've actually seen a couple of times so far, by the way, which I think is not quite true. I just think he's a pretty average defender. And the fact that he has some games where he's really good and other games where he doesn't look up to it at all and makes really poor decisions and bad mistakes, such as the air game, for example, that's been enough to put some people off him altogether.
And that's fair enough. And I mean, obviously the consistency, I do agree with the consistency kind of point to Eze, where he has had, did we give man of the match for the Arbroath away game, the Arbroath away win and the Raith Rovers home win?
Yeah, both of them, yeah.
Yeah, the two games there, and I'm sure he's had a couple of other games where, again, he's been probably in with a shout of being a man of the match. And we have then seen, as Enzo mentions, the air game. I suppose you could argue, it may be unfair to argue the very first air game, the 3-2 game, because, of course, that was him literally 2 days into the country. But still, at the same time, you were like, that was a little bit shaky as well. He's had a couple of other performances that, yeah, you do wonder, okay, what's going on here? But he's not, and that's like, he's a different type of defender to Charlie Fox. Is that maybe Eze's, a victim of circumstance here, because Charlie Fox is, obviously Charlie Fox is a great defender just in general, but yeah, he's vocal, he's very good on the ball, he's obviously still good in the air. I think when you look at it statistically, and we've seen people post, it's all these mad stats, it's the kind of thing that, it's all the analytics where people are looking at, the amount of headers won per offensive movement and all, it's all this kind of wild stuff, the football manager type stats that you get on the computer game. It's like Eze is very, very good at what he does, which is basically being a big guy to win headers and to be a threat in the air. And Charlie Fox is a different player where he's actually, okay, he's still a good threat in the air. There's no denying that. I'm not saying he's not. But his strengths maybe lie slightly elsewhere. And yeah, he's much better with the ball at his feet. And he's also got that commanding presence. Why are people so intent to say Eze's not good enough for the championship, Eze's not good enough for this team, when he is, he's shown he's got he has got a skill set that can be used and can be taken advantage of for us. Why are people so intent on writing him off 3 weeks into the season?
Do you not think expectation is a factor as well? Like when we signed him, obviously the key part of his career that everybody was focusing on was the fact that he had a few caps for Nigeria. But when you look at guys over the years that have got caps for Scotland, for example, there's guys that aren't, you probably wouldn't be particularly excited for us to sign. Do you know, it doesn't always take that much to get called up to a national team. And I think some people, myself included, to be fair, because I was really, really excited by the Eze rumour for such a long time, and I was buzzing when it was finally announced. I think we just expected him to be an absolute world beater, and he's not a world beater, but I think he's probably an all right championship level defender. He's neither amazing nor rubbish.
And he put the fear into Wraith last time he played them.
He did, yeah.
And we've got them this coming week. I mean, I maybe shouldn't jump ahead here, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him, perhaps, if he's fit, being called back up, because the game plan against Wraith was to put the ball on Eze's head. And it worked. It did work in defence, because again, even that game, he started that game where he won him. He got man of the match. He started that game the first 10 minutes being a little bit shaky, but then he came onto the game, got a goal, and then just dominated the second half, especially against Wraith Rovers. I don't know. I'm surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised. Everybody has their own opinions and totally entitled to it, but I'm surprised at how almost angry people seem to be. Just about the sort of presence of Eze. I think it's utter nonsense. I think people need to realise not every player's going to be a Charlie Fox. Not every player's going to, you know, he's going to be a big vocal centre-half who's going to take the ball on Maisie's 60-yard runs as well. You know, that's just not going to happen. Sometimes you're just going to want a big guy that can win a header, that can win the ball. I don't know. I'm finding it hard because I am such a big fan of Eze. And again, like you say, Andrew, we all want him to do well and we're all dead excited for him coming in. I just wish people would kind of lighten up a little bit.
I think it's probably venting on our general defensive frailties, because I think we've obviously talked about it literally every single game, including this game, how we're continually making mistakes at the back. And you obviously seek reasons for that. And a lot of the reasons that we seek kind of come to the most obvious sort of flashpoints in games, and the ones that look the worst are the ones that you remember, isn't it? So I can kind of understand it to an extent, but I think what's maybe more interesting is Coyle's not going to give up on Eze, and I don't think he should. We've seen guys who've played for us who've looked relatively average for periods of time turn into really good footballers, talking about Jack Thompson, Davidson to an extent, Murray's came on to a game, loads of these guys who, Kildare as well, who
Robson
haven't...
Robson has got better.
Yeah, there was a period when Robson started like with Queens where he just didn't look very great, and now he's basically first name in the team sheet alongside Dom Thomas, maybe. So there's clearly a route to progression there, and I would like to think that they'll give him the time and space to do that. But what I will be interested to see is how Coyle approaches this over the next 2 weeks, because we've seen that Fox is fit. Obviously, he said he was tired, but he got through the game and he looked absolutely fine on the most part. So it'll be interesting to see the setup, because you talked about like Fox being and his leadership qualities and very vocal. And I think you've seen the difference in confidence in the defence with Fox there. You wonder if Kildare might end up in a tricky position if Coyle is wanting to persist with Eze in the sort of short to medium term. And he feels that partnering him with Fox might be a way to kind of elevate Eze's performance as well. And that would be no slight on Kildare, because he's been really decent for quite a long period of time. But I do wonder if he'll be tempted to do that at some point, just to see how it goes, because I think they've only played a very, very short amount of time together, so we don't really know how they look.
Yeah, I tend to agree that if he's going to drop one of the two from Saturday for Eze, that it's more likely to be Kildare, which is crazy because I think he's been so consistent this season, but I guess we'll see. I didn't mean for this conversation to drag on so long. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the Eze versus Fox situation, but there's clearly a lot to talk about.
No, there definitely is. And we've thought about before whether we would change to three at the back or something. Definitely don't want to see that happening. I agree with you. If he is going to drop somebody, it probably will be Kildare. It will be harsh on Kildare. And I don't think that will help Eze's cause if he maybe has another shaky game. But that is to come in the future. We will have to wait and see what happens there. In terms of, we will go back to what happened at Inverness, or against Inverness at Ockleview. And after that goal, so obviously, Mackay made it 1-0, 80 minutes in. The rest of the first half was pretty close. We had a couple of chances, but we also had Lee Coday to thank, actually, for a good tackle to stop Oakley going through. And Ferry did have a save to make as well just before half-time. So we got to half-time and it was like, okay, we're 1-0 down. We hadn't played poorly and it had really only been one gilt-edged chance that they'd had and they'd taken it. But we came out in the second half and, well, I mean, we mentioned before it was 82% possession over the course of the 90 of the minutes. I think maybe in the first half it would have been probably close to maybe like 60-40 in terms of the possession stats. So I think that only just goes to show how dominant we then were in the second half, because it was constant Queen's Park pressure, constant Queen's Park chances. As Calum said, we created enough chances. We had about 18, 19 corners, something like that. We were all over Inverness. It started again right after kickoff. We get the ball, we win the ball back, and we Jarrett had a chance just off target, and then a couple of minutes later on, Kilday had a header at the back post, but he was ruled out for offside. I think that one probably looks offside when you look back at the highlights. I don't think there's too many complaints there. We kept going, we kept going, we kept going, and finally we get another corner, and Charlie Fox up, big header, 6-yard box, into the back of the net. And yeah, given his length of time out and obviously the performance he'd had, and I'm sure, as we say, there was probably some relief from the goal that Inverness scored, you could tell he enjoyed that, couldn't you?
Oh, aye. I mean, that must have been a long time coming. To get his first start after his injury for a young guy being out of that period of time. And what is a big season for him. Like, he's going to want to prove himself at this level. Obviously, he only signed a one-year contract, so maybe that tells you about his ambitions and stuff like that. So he'll have been absolutely delighted, and I was pleased for him as well. And it was a great header. He fair leaped. I mean, he's a tall guy, but he still managed to get himself well off the ground. So no, I was absolutely delighted for him, and long may it continue with our centre-back scoring headers at corners, because Ezzy's had a few as well, and it makes such an impact on the game because we've seen it against us lots.
Yeah, I was just buzzing to see him start, but for him to actually contribute with a goal as well was just the icing on the cake. It was brilliant.
Yeah, it really was, as you say. It was great to see him back, and it was a great performance, but I think you two have already spoiled it, because it's going to be two votes for Fox anyway. I think it would be incredibly harsh for me to say anything otherwise, so I think we're all going to agree, and it's all going to be a Charlie Fox unanimous vote for our man of the match as well. It was a brilliant performance for him coming back in, especially as he had only played, as far as we can tell, like 45 minutes for young QP, so 45 minutes of reserve football. So yeah, to come straight back in to the league against a tough opponent like Inverness, who don't let you in and don't let you score goals an awful lot, it was great to get him up there and to do exactly that. So he scored that on 50 minutes, and then again a couple of minutes later it was that Josh McPake chance that I mentioned before. It was excellent work by Thomas on the touchline, who wriggled through, and I don't know how he managed to keep the ball. He gets through, cuts the ball back, and McPake, he's about 8-10 yards out, and he hits it completely wide. I gave him the chance, and I tried to fight his corner earlier on, but that was a poor miss. And were you at all worried at that point, Enzo, that it was going to be another one of those nights?
It's weird, actually, because I felt fairly confident after we got the first goal that we were going to get another one. I would have maybe started to get a little bit more impatient had it taken us a little bit longer, but I don't know. I had this feeling that we were going to manage to go on and get the win, and obviously I was proven to be right in the end. But yeah, that was a bit of a poor miss. The strange thing is, actually, when you look at the statistics, despite the fact that we had so much possession, we actually didn't have that many shots on target at all. It felt at the time like it was probably a bit more, but that's probably just because we had so much of the ball. Looking back at the highlights, I think it was, how many shots was it? I can't remember. I'm sure it was only 10 shots in total. Yeah, across the whole match, which is pretty low considering, you know, we pretty much controlled the flow of play. But no, I for me it was never in doubt when Fox got up and headed that ball into the back of the net.
And I think that we shouldn't sort of diminish how difficult it is to break down some of these teams in this league, especially like from a defensive perspective. Fair enough, we had to possession, and maybe that is reflective of Inverness's injuries and stuff like that. But even in spite of their injuries, they've still conceded one of the lowest amounts of goals in the entire league by a decent distance. I mean, they've conceded six less goals than us, and from a side that's been depleted for a wee while now, it's not bad. And when you look through Inverness's history over their last few games, the problem is goal scoring. They don't really score more than one goal a game, which was reflected against us. But from a defensive perspective, they've been pretty decent on the whole. So it's no mean feat sort of breaking these teams down, because I was when I looked at the stats and I was thinking about it, I was like, oh my goodness, is that actually objectively 19 corners, 82% possession? Like, almost semi-disappointed. Should we have been doing better? But I think we just need to say well done to them and move on.
Well, see, we did have the McPeak chance, which should have at the very least been on target. We then had the first of hitting the post a couple of times. Jarrett hit the post with for another good shot, but yeah, he was unfortunate for it to be just off the post and back out. But then there was the introduction of Grant Savory, as we mentioned before. He came on in 70 minutes, and in the 73rd minute, he had the assist to get Simon Murray his first goal in, what, 9 weeks, something like that. And once again, much like Charlie Fox earlier on, you could tell he absolutely loved it. It was some more good play. It started out the right-hand side and the ball came all the way across to Savory. And he kind of stood up his defender. And then I thought he kind of had actually missed the ball, but I think it was just that good of a dummy that he sold everybody, including me. And then when he took his touch, the Inverness defender just did not have his feet under him at all. He went down on the deck. Savory glided past him, looked up. Simon Murray at the back post. Brilliant ball across. An easy tap in for Murray from a couple of yards out. It was, as I say, delighted to see Charlie Fox get a goal. Perhaps even more delighted to see Murray get a goal.
Oh, absolutely. I am so pleased for Murray to get a goal. This has been coming for such a long time. And I've mentioned this before. I feel as though he's one of these guys that really thrives on confidence. And see, just getting one goal back. Listen, you can't discredit how important his play is over the rest of the, you know, all over the park, not just the goals. The goals are great, but he does so much for this team. But for him to finally be able to put the ball in the back of the net, it wouldn't surprise me if he went on another wee run again like we saw at the start of the season. I think I would put money on him to score against Wraith as well next week now.
He is. He's definitely a streaky player in terms of his goal-scoring performances. But yeah, you're totally 100% agree with you. Murray needed a goal desperately. And I think, see, if you put that chance at the start of the game in front of him next week, I reckon it's a different outcome. Because I just think that's the sort of player that he is. So yeah, well done to him. It was a great run into the box. Well done to Savory for a nice cross. And I'm just looking at the top scorers for the league this season, and he's still pretty high up the league. You've kind of got Murray sitting on joint thirds behind Connor Scully at Cove after he scored a couple against us. Zach Robertson and Dundee, they're both on 7. And then you've got obviously Blooming Akinyemi, who scored about 105 goals, but in reality is only 13 at this point in the season. So he's still up that top end, and it shows you how difficult sort of getting on consistent runs goal scoring wise in this league, because the only one who's done it so far is Akinyemi.
Most of them have been against us, have they not?
It feels like it.
Five of them. How many has he got? 13?
13 goals, yeah. 4 assists. Aye.
5 against us, 5 of the 13 against us, which is actually pretty incredible when you think about it.
Yeah, even by our standards of what we've shown at the back this season. But yeah, absolutely agree with you. Delighted to see Murray get his goal. And yeah, I mean, it's. I don't even think he's been lacking in confidence. He's still been getting these chances and everything. But yeah, it's just that little extra. I don't even know if it is even a stroke of luck now, or whether you'll be able to tie that in with that new confidence with, but it's just, he's been so close so many times. Just, yeah.
See, the thing is, you say he's not been lacking in confidence, and I get where you're coming from, because he still does everything else right, but he has had some chances where, for example, the chance he had in the first half, I think he should have burst the net and he hit it straight to the keeper. He didn't hit it straight to the keeper. He hit it, I think it was maybe just going to go in, but it wasn't a great shot, and the keeper managed to touch it wide for a corner, one of our many corners. But I feel as though just that was a chance that earlier on in this season, Simon Murray would probably have buried. And I think now that he's done it once, I think we'll see him do it again. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he plays over the next few weeks, because I think we're going to see a slightly different player. And do you know what? I actually think as well, see, having watched the goal back a couple of times, it's one of those ones where it maybe looks a little bit easier than what it was, because the ball was coming at him at a fair bit of pace. The defender was right on him, and it would have been easy to kind of catch that wrong and put it wide or sky it over the bar or whatever. So, let's just hope that we'll see more of this from Murray, more goals, because it's we've been missing a proper goal scorer for the past wee while, I think, and that's been a contributing factor in probably the poorest run of form we've had all season. But I'm feeling pretty good about things now, knowing that he's got that back.
Yeah, it is interesting actually. If you dig a wee bit deeper into the stats when you look at the top scorer tables, because they give you stuff on total shots as well and goal conversion percentages. And if you basically scroll down the entire table on the BBC website for the goal conversion percentages, out of all of the top scorers in the league, Murray is joint bottom in that with 14%. So if you're actually just comparing him and Akinyemi, they both played the same amount of games. They both basically had the same amount of shots. So 43 and 46 for both of them respectively, which I'll say is much, much higher than literally everyone else in the league for both of them. So Murray's clearly generating all those chances, and that's what we talk about quite often. The positions that he gets himself into in comparison to other strikers that are available, he does that really, really well, but it's just that it's that final element where Akinyemi obviously doubles his goals and Murray's kind of lagging behind a wee bit on there. But, I mean, he just creates so many more opportunities than everyone else. If he can just get a few more in the back of the net, he'll be rolling.
Yeah, definitely, and so will we if he does that, because after he scored and it became 2-1 to Queen's Park, as we say, that first time in two and a bit, in fact, I think 2 years, I think it was November 2020, as it was Enzo's stat, that it was the first time since an opposition team had scored first that Queen's Park had then come back to win the game. After we went 2-1 up, the game, I mean, it was only going one way. There was no other chances really for Inverness off. No. Queen's Park did hit the post again the last minute. Jack Thompson with another great run, and he tried to take a shot at the near post and unfortunately hit the post. But aside from that, Queen's Park seen the game out. It was a 2-1 victory to the Spiders. That leaves us shooting back up, as is the way with this league table. We went from 7th to 4th on 24 points, 1 point behind Dundee and Morton on 25, and we are currently 4 points off of Ayr at the top of the table on 28. If you look just behind us, we have this week's opponents Raith Rovers and Inverness on 22. Partick Thistle continuing their descent down the table on 20 points. And then Cove 17, and then quite a gap to Arbroath and Hamilton. So it was a big win in terms of obviously the performance and getting the 3 points just for us in general. But when you look at the table now, 12-point gap over ninth place. It's way too early to be calling anything like, oh yeah, don't worry about that. But when you look at the form of Arbroath and Hamilton and the way that those teams are, you look how we are, there is a big element of our support that have always been a case of you've got to look over your shoulder first before you look forward. How far away do you think you are, Enzo, from being, okay, we can just focus on looking forward now?
It depends on how you define looking forward. I have never at any point this season been particularly concerned with the threat of relegation, because I think there's much worse sides in this league than us. I think come the end of the season, you're going to be seeing Hamilton and Arbroath fighting it out down at the bottom. And I think we're just too good for either of them, to be completely honest with you. I know obviously Arbroath took that point from us, and I know we've got Hamilton in a couple of weeks and they might make me eat my words, but it's just, I don't know. I think we're more of a sort of mid to upper table squad, and the way we play is mid to upper table as well. And I think the league table is quite interesting for me. Obviously, everybody's been talking about how crazy the Championship is this season, but I think you're slowly starting to see little gaps start to show. And I think between now and maybe Christmas, we'll start seeing a little bit more of a gap between the clubs that look as though they're going to be finishing towards the playoffs, and we'll see a little bit more of a gap at the bottom end too. And I'm fairly confident that we'll, absolute worst case scenario, I can't see us finishing below about 7th, to be completely honest with you.
I would agree with you. I think that top 7, I don't think you can call anything at this point. Thistle won't continue for the entire season losing every game in ridiculous manners like they are right now, as funny as that may be. And you've obviously got the questions over the top two, Aaron and Morton. Like, I think it's fair to say you wouldn't expect them to be where they are currently. So whether they hold on to that, I don't know. And then that kind of opens up the rest of the field. It was such an important game, though, that, wasn't it? And I know that we keep saying this practically every single week, but like, what a different complexion it is looking at the table just now, us sitting on fourth place, sort of within touching distance of second, depending how results go at the weekend. Whereas you lose that game and you flip us back down to sixth place, 4 points away from Cali Thistle, having to, yeah, we wouldn't be in the playoff spots, nor would we be within one win of the playoffs, which kind of makes it a bit of a different feel. So absolutely huge win, and this season is going to continue to be bonkers.
We all agree that our man of the match for that game is Charlie Fox.
Yes, with a shout out for Jack Thompson, who again is insanely consistent on a week-to-week basis. I think he had another really good game, but yeah, given the impact and circumstances, I'm happy to go for Fox.
I don't think we've mentioned them at all, but I thought Mal Boateng had a fantastic game again as well. I know they can pretty much just assume that he's having a great game, but it was fantastic, especially in that second half. He did. I think he's not a particularly fancy player, but he just does everything right, absolutely everything, and it's a joy to watch, an absolute joy to watch. We're so lucky to have him.
Yeah, I agree. And obviously Dom Thomas as well coming back and had another great game.
Of course, yeah.
I think it is fair to say that, yeah, Charlie Fox, for having been out for so long, and yeah, the impact he had, despite the mistake at the beginning of the game, he more than made up for it. So yeah, our man of the match for the 2-1 victory over Inverness is Charlie Fox. So let's move on and look at two big bits of news for Queen's Park in the last week. As I said, one of them relates to this calendar year, and one of them will relate to next calendar year. It was finally confirmed after what's felt like weeks of rumours and whispers and everything else, and newspaper articles, all that. It was finally confirmed that Queen's Park will be going back to play at Hampden for the first time since pre-COVID, or the very, very beginning of COVID, since March 2020. We're going to be playing our league fixture against Hamilton on the 3rd of December and our cup game against Montrose on the 10th of December. Both of those games will be 3 o'clock kickoffs at Hampden. Obviously, we've been at Oakleview this season. We were at Fir Hill in the 21-22 season. That initial period of COVID where we couldn't go to games anyway, we obviously left Hampden. We were at the Falkirk Stadium. This is going to be our first couple of games at home, and I'm going to use that word because it obviously was home for the sale and then Lesser Hampden, but we'll come to that in a second. Our first games back in the South Side in over 2 years. Buzzing. I mean, is there any word to say it? Just buzzing after going about everywhere, here, there and everywhere. We're finally going back, even if it's just for a couple of weeks. But as I say, the rumour is it might be for a little bit longer.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so looking forward to it. And obviously, I'm not just talking about the fact that I'm about a 2-minute walk away from Hampden, so it's very convenient for me. But it's so exciting to finally know that we're going to see Queen's Park playing back in the South Side again. And obviously, with the World Cup on and the fact that there's no Premiership football too, it's such a brilliant opportunity for the club to encourage as many people to get along to these games as possible, because obviously with Hampden, you don't have any kind of capacity concerns. You can squeeze as many folk in as realistically are ever going to want to. And you, who knows, you might get some folk hooked as well. Fingers crossed for the Challenge Cup game against Montrose, as clubs generally do. We're able to agree with them to lower the prices too. Hopefully we get loads and loads of schools in, and I can't wait. I really can't wait. I'm genuinely very, very excited about these two games.
Aye, same. It just gives you something to look forward to, doesn't it? And if nothing else, getting to go back to Hampden, and even if we're only there for a couple of games before we perhaps move into Lesser, just getting the opportunity to go back after not really getting that when we left is excellent. And I'm glad that the club have managed to secure it for the games that they did. And I think even more sort of exciting for me than the initial Hampden announcement in December is just a confirmation that as the article says, whilst there is still much work to do, our intention is to have Lesser open in January. Finally, hearing confirmation of that on our website is great. Whether that materializes into specific dates, whether it's the start or the end of January or whatnot, just the fact that they're now being open about that, talking about it, is excellent. I'm glad they've done that. And it just gives you a wee bit of hope, doesn't it, that it finally we might be seeing an end to it pretty soon, and we can all start kind of moving on from this this saga and hopefully build the club up, because as you mentioned, like, Enzo, lots of opportunity back being back in the south side to start all the other stuff, all the community stuff, growing the fan base, all those good things that we need to sort of progress going forward. So yes, absolutely buzzing, can't wait.
Yep.
I'm going to wonder if it'll maybe be stretched beyond that, because as I say, the little still rumour that we've heard is, of course, we've got these two games at home, then our next two games before the sort of Christmas kind of period is away to Morton and away to Arbroath. But we've obviously got the New Year game against Partick Thistle looming. You've got to wonder that surely if, obviously it totally depends on the Scottish FA and the SPFL, who the club do thank at the bottom of this statement, obviously for agreeing and obviously the negotiations behind the scenes to allow us to go back to Hampden for these two games. You've got to wonder if the club will be pushing to have that game at Hampden as well, because that would be, I mean, another great, just in general, another great opportunity to have a game in the south side, but to have the big derby game the new year, at New Year, you know, again, a great time for derby games, just typically in Scottish football. You've got to imagine they'll be maybe working overtime to try and get that as well. What do you think of that?
I would assume so, yeah. And the thing is, we've heard it rumoured for a while that the BBC are quite keen on showing that game too. They've not showed any of our home games yet, and they're entitled to show two of them. So I suspect we might very well see that. And if that's at Hampden, it would be quite the big occasion. They would absolutely... The BBC would definitely milk the whole Glasgow derby side of that to try and build it up as much as possible. And you'd like to imagine Thistle would bring a big crowd, assuming they'll be playing a little bit better by then. We'll be able to get a few extra people through the gate. That could be really exciting if it does end up being at Hampden.
Yeah, and I think it's fair to assume the club must be looking for that, whether that is, I mean, they didn't mention actual timelines for Lesser Hampden when they'd be aiming for in January, but directly at New Year seems unlikely. So you've got to imagine that they'll be hoping to negotiate a position that lets them in there. Whether that materialises or not, we'll need to wait and see, but it makes complete sense, and it'd be a great start to the year to have us play Thistle there.
Yeah, it absolutely would. We'll obviously keep our fingers crossed for that. But as you say, Callum, there's actual official updates in general. We should be very grateful for that. We should be thankful that's there and that we're finally getting something. But yes, Queen's Park back at Hampden, beginning of December, and potentially back at Lesser Hampden, back home properly, in the not-too-distant future. Somebody who will be joining us at whether it's Big Hampden or Lesser Hampden is our Thurley winger, Aaron Healy, who are thoroughly announced on Twitter. So we're recording on Tuesday. Was that yesterday? Was it just Monday that was announced by them? That he has agreed a deal with Queen's Park to join us from January 23. It's not actually been officially tweeted by Queen's Park, despite the fact our Thurley have put it out there and it seems to be pretty much done. But yeah, it seems like we're signing another young, potentially very exciting talent from the lower leagues of Scottish football. Enzo, I believe you were looking to put in a little bit of legwork and find out a little bit about this guy.
Aye, and to be honest with you, unfortunately, there's not a hell of a lot out there, as is often the case with guys playing at that level of Scottish football. Aaron Healy, 19-year-old winger. I think he tends to play on the left rather than on the right. He was Arthurley's under-20s player of the year last season. In July, signed a new deal with the club. I think it was just a one-year contract. But even though he was playing for the 20s last season, he also broke into the first team too. And some of the comments I've read online from people who tend to watch football at that level about how talented this guy is, they're just brimming with praise for him. So, yeah, apparently quite a nippy wee winger, quite hard working with a really good attitude, which I think can't be understated. I think that's really important for somebody that's looking to make it in the game. And I suppose we'll see. The only thing that I have seen suggested that that's maybe not a strength for him is his shooting, but there's still time to work on that. Somebody on Pine Bovril actually somebody who seems to be in the know when it comes to Arthur has suggested that we've paid £16,000 for him. Now, I don't know how much truth there is in that, but that seems like a decent chunk of cash for somebody coming from the West of Scotland Football League. But yes, it's an exciting one, and something I think is possibly worth highlighting as well is that he is younger than Scott Williamson and was playing at a higher level than Scott Williamson. So given that Williamson, yeah, he's still got a lot of learning to do, but let's be honest, like, he doesn't look wildly out of place in the Championship. Fingers crossed this guy, he's a great addition to the squad, and obviously he's not going back on loan the way Williamson did too, so we obviously think that he's gonna fit into this squad pretty quickly.
There's a few points worth talking about there. First of all, I like the signing. It sounds good, and kind of fits the profile of everything that the club's talking about, isn't it? Get your sort of young, really, really talented guys. These are the sort of players who I guess have always existed in the lower leagues of Scottish football, but we would have never seen them at Queen's because they would have made that jump to the bigger sides straight away. So it's good that we are in that sort of battle for these sort of guys going forward, which is excellent. But I think there's a couple of questions that come out for me. So the first one is, if we've paid money for him and he was on a one-year contract with them, then it must mean that we have some sort of intention for him this season. So if he's coming in during January, then to me that leaves quite a lot of wingers. So I'm thinking Longridge and Moore. So I'm wondering if that means that they might be trying to shift one of them on and to have Healy as a sort of backup winger, start to get him integrated into the squad this season to help his development, rather than persisting with the likes of Moore, for example, who I think it's fair to say might not have a longer term future at the club just based off of how Coyle has used him since he came to us. I don't know what you guys think about that.
Yeah, I think that makes sense because we have so many players that can play in those areas. Moore is an interesting one to me because at the start of last season, I thought he had a couple of okay games, but then he sort of fell off and he was proven to, I thought, not be good enough to be playing in League One. But then this season, he's actually looked all right when he has come off the bench, and he's played with a fair bit of intensity, and I suppose that might just be that he's been trying to prove that he can be a part of this squad, and I would imagine he's the kind of player that we've maybe even offered to go out on loan, and maybe he's just not wanted to. I don't know. Obviously, Coyle and the rest of the coaching staff see him in training all the time, and they've still decided that he's not quite ready, or he's not quite good enough, for want of a better term. That might feel a little bit harsh, but yeah, he's not what we need at this point anyway. But it wouldn't totally shock me to see someone like him, or potentially even Longridge, be sent out on loan for the rest of the season with a view to not renewing their contracts in the summer.
Yeah, it's a fair point, and it's definitely one worth noting. Not only have you got Longridge and Moore, but obviously we've already spoken about the fact that we've got maybe three options to play on the wing already in the first team, and we're having to choose two of them. So yeah, we're perhaps getting a little bit crowded there. I don't think it's unreasonable to think that at least one, perhaps even both of those names might be moving on from the club perhaps shortly. But having said that, we are still very much excited to see what Aaron Healy will bring to Queen's Park, and we'll obviously look forward to maybe a little bit more coming from Queen's Park officially about him and find out a little bit more about the player there.
Yeah, of course, because Arthur Lee announced this yesterday, and I think that maybe took our social media team off guard. I don't know if they were necessarily expecting it to go public yet, because we've still not actually confirmed it. So maybe we won't actually hear anything from Queen's Park until it goes through in January.
One thing I will say is that I read their the press release that was on their actual website, and it did have a wee note at the bottom of it that said, "We would like to thank Queen's for the way negotiations were conducted," which I thought was interesting to put that into the sort of statement. And I hope that continues. Obviously, as fans, we've maybe had a lot of criticism in terms of the communications and stuff like that coming out from the club, but you do hope that they kind of aim to have a decent reputation with these sort of sides so that you can conduct business well with them over the years ahead.
I think I'm fairly certain that when we signed Williamson from Cambuslang Rangers, they said the very same thing in their press release.
Yeah, and it's important because that kind of information spreads, and if they've got a choice in who they want to sort of negotiate with, then you kind of want to have those relationships.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Definitely, especially when you hear with Healy, because we not heard the whisper as well that there was a Premier League club or two that were actually looking at him as well.
That's so right, yeah.
Hearts, yeah, and especially with kind of, you know, clubs, Arthurly, Cambuslang Rangers, you know, if we're going to be looking at the lower leagues of Scottish football and, you know, obviously maybe perhaps out with the top four of the pyramid, you know, these clubs are all going to talk to each other and stuff, and it's good to have a good relationship and to be perhaps known as a club that will be, you know, decent towards these clubs as well, and that's only going to help us.
It makes sense because we saw, even like back in the day when we were amateur, and obviously these bigger clubs would swoop in for our players, Dundee United ended up building a bit of a reputation for being quite difficult to deal with and not following through on promises and stuff like that. So, you're spot on. We want to be well known for doing these things properly, and it puts us in a better situation when it comes to negotiating these deals with other clubs. So, fingers crossed that that's a bit of a reputation that the club can develop and maintain.
Yeah, definitely. We hope that is a maybe part of the start of a good, relationship and a good connection going forward. And I think it would be great to see. Obviously, we're going to develop our own players through our own system, but if we can find young domestic talent as well and bring that up through, that's something that fans always love to see. So, yeah, we certainly hope that the club continues down that route. We are going to move on now, and we are going to have a look ahead to this Saturday, 3:00. Say first time in a while, and it's going to be an away trip to Kirkcaldy to play Raith Rovers, who, as we said before, currently sitting one place behind us in the league on 22 points, Queen's Park sitting on 24. Raith's last three games, so they have also beaten Partick Thistle. They've been lucky enough to play them during this particular run of form that they're in. They beat Partick Thistle 3-0, they then beat Hamilton 3-1, but last weekend there, they lost 2-0 to Dundee. Obviously, the Queen's Park last three games, just to clarify, 2-2 draw to Dundee, lost 2-0 to Cove, and of course, the 2-1 victory over Inverness. So we're a couple of points ahead of Raith on the table. Enzo, I say you've had a bee in your bonnet about Raith since the very beginning when you predicted them to be finishing ninth.
Yeah.
Number one, how do you feel about that prediction at this moment in time? And, well, number two, what are you expecting to see from them this week?
It's a good question, and I'll be honest with you, I don't think that my prediction is necessarily going to hold up come the end of the season, but I also don't think Raith are going to be in contention for the playoffs either come the end of the season. I've watched some of the highlights in that, and do you know what? They play some really nice football, but they are really missing a proper goal scorer up front. And I think if we can win the midfield battles on Saturday, if we can take control of the middle of the park, I think we'll win, and I think we could potentially win comfortably. They've signed this Faroese striker who's about 6'8" or something ridiculous like that, but from what I heard, he's not been up to much so far, and apparently Raith were very, very poor last week against Dundee. Now, obviously, Dundee's a difficult game. Dundee away is up at Dens Park, much like ourselves. Their season's probably not going to be defined by losing at Dens Park, let's be honest. Most teams are going to go there and struggle. I still think come the end of the season, Dundee are probably going to win the league. But my expectation is that we are going to win on Saturday. I think we will, and I'm actually really looking forward to it.
You're massively more confident than I am. I'm just kind of going off the last game. I thought it was a really tight game. Obviously, I think that was Eze, wasn't it? He scored in that game. But like when you looked at the stats and stuff like that for that game, everything was just the same. There was no real variation between the two sides. And I think you're right, Enzo. They probably are missing a striker up front, but they've got a lot of tidy players with a lot of attacking threat. Connolly scored quite a few goals this season. I think he might actually be their top goal scorer. Obviously, he played for us years and years ago, so they do have a decent group of players in there, and away from home, no idea what to expect either. So, yeah, I think it will be a tight game, but I'm hoping that Fox starts again and he's sharp from the start, and that we can at least just keep it to one goal conceded, because I reckon there's a chance that we score a couple of goals in this after the sort of comeback win against Inverness.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So Connolly is the current Raith Rovers top goal scorer in the league with 5 goals. They've also then got, let me see here, that's Sam Stanton, isn't it, with 4. So we've got obviously Simon Murray is our top goal scorer, but they've got actually Connolly on 5, Stanton on 4, and then they've got Connell and Gullen on two, whereas we've then got, we've also got Simon Murray all the way up there on six, and it's Tommy Robson on three. So although we have scored a few more goals, not a lot more in general in the league, but ours are very spread out across the team, whereas they do have their a few focal points up front. And you're right, when you look back at the stats from the last game, the head-to-head, when we obviously beat them 1-0, it was a pretty even game. The big difference in that game was our tactic at corners, which was the first time, and I think actually if you think back, it's probably the last time we've done it properly like that, where it was literally put Eze up in the box and put everybody, you know, put the ball right on top of him. Don't be messing about with short corners. Don't be trying this, that and the other. Put it on Eze. Put it on top of the goalkeeper. Make him work for it. And it paid off, because Eze probably could have scored two or three, I think, that day. He obviously did get the one, and that was enough for the victory. Do you think that there will be the temptation to bring Eze back in and deploy the exact same tactic?
I think it's possible that we might see Eze back in, to be completely honest with you, but I don't think it's necessarily just for his attacking capabilities. I think it might just be because Coyle's clearly quite loyal to him, and I have a feeling he probably wouldn't have dropped him against Inverness unless he had no choice. I don't know how he'll incorporate him into the team. I know there's been some suggestions of possibly a three at the back. I don't know how I feel about that, but let's be honest, like, when it comes to the attacking threat, we've seen... we saw just the other day that Charlie Fox can do that too. So I don't know if you would bring Eze in just for that. I don't know what I'm expecting from that point of view. I'm really, really curious to see how we do line up.
Yeah, I'd probably agree with you. I don't know what he's going to do. I think the most likely one is that, honestly, I think the most likely scenario is that Eze comes back in for Fox, whether that be through fitness or choice, I'm not sure. But it's not what I would do personally. I'm slightly curious about the prospect of having Eze alongside Fox. I mean, from an aerial perspective, we tend to struggle with balls into the box. Surely, if you've got the two of them, like, that's going to go somewhat to that.
That was always what we all thought was going to be the first choice pairing, didn't we? I mean, have they actually played together?
Obviously, you know, like 20 minutes or something like that.
Yeah, when Eze came on that 3-2 game against Ayr. Like, the two haven't actually played together for a variety of reasons yet, have they?
No, they've not. So it must be an option. And if you've got the two of them both in our own box and the opposition box, surely it's only a matter of time before you get some sort of goal from it. They're both absolutely giant. Obviously, Eze's way bigger than Fox, but Fox is massive, like, physically, and he's got a great jump on him. So, yeah, it would be interesting to see how they go, and if Fox has somewhat of a calming influence on Eze so that he can focus on the bits of his game, which he's better at.
Let's for a minute entertain the idea of starting Eze, Cody and Fox. What do you think about that?
At the expense of who?
Well, that's the thing. Does it have to be at the expense of anyone? Because one of the other concerns, I don't know if concern is necessarily the right word, but one of the other areas where there's a lot of chopping and changing and confusion as to who the best option is right back, okay? So say we've got Ezekiel Day and Fox, and then we've got Robson playing as a sort of left wing back, let's say. Can Jarrett play as a right wing back? Where he's more going forward than anything else, because he doesn't necessarily need to do much work at the back with three solid centre halves. You know, Eze, Fox. So Eze, the aerial, doing all the work in the air. Kilday's a bit pacier than the other two, you'd probably say, and Fox totally commanding at the back. That way, we still manage to maintain Jarrett, Savory, Thomas, all in the starting lineup.
Nah, because you have to sacrifice something there, don't you? Because to me, if you're pushing sort of Robson and your right back essentially further up into the pitch in that sort of like Andy Robertson style wing back role, which isn't really a defender, half winger, that's where Davidson probably makes more sense at that point than he does as a sort of flat right back. So if you had him out there and Robson on the left side, I mean, you're not going to sacrifice one of Mal and Thompson, even although for that formation, it probably makes sense because you've got so many guys sitting at the back. And I mean, God help the person who tries to pick between putting one of them on the bench right now.
Oh no, yeah, I couldn't choose. I absolutely couldn't choose. I'm not saying that I necessarily want to see that. I would personally rather just stick with the exact same team from Saturday there. Starks Park on Saturday, I wouldn't change a thing. I don't like chopping and changing when we get a good result in the back of, and it's not just a good result, but it was a good performance as well. The scoreline wasn't reflective of the overall balance of the game. I would personally stick with the exact same thing. I'm just, you know, thinking about outside the box here.
Well, in terms of that as well, then we spoke plenty there about the changes potential at the back. Obviously, Grant Savery did start on the bench against Inverness, came off and got an assist within 3 minutes. I know you're saying don't chop and change and keep the same lineup, Enzo, but I'm going to give you another chance. Would you be dropping, say, well, McPake and putting Thomas back on the left, put Savery on the right? Or would you be sticking with those three in behind Sy Murray? So McPake on the left, Thomas on the right, Jarrett in the middle, and keep Savery for coming on off the bench?
Oh, I actually forgot about this part of the lineup when I said about 30 seconds ago that I wouldn't change anything. Do you know what? I could understand if Coyle didn't change anything, but yeah, I think I would probably rather see Savory start. I think I'd rather see Savory start. I would rather see Savory start, but also I wouldn't complain if he just went out with the exact same starting 11.
Nice position there, right on the middle of that fence. Well, Callum, you
what got do you think, David?
Oh, well, for me, I would be keeping the same lineup. Savory, he is still coming back from injury. He's starting to look better. He, obviously, the first few games he was coming off the bench wasn't having a brilliant impact. He obviously started up against Cove. I mean, he wasn't the problem against Cove, but obviously Cove wasn't a great game just all round for Queen's Park. Coming off the bench here against Inverness, that was the first time in a few weeks to me that he's looked back to near his best. So I think maybe he's still a week or so away. See if he maybe got a little bit longer in the game against Raith and continued to show that, you know, another improvement, and he's coming right back up to where he was before his injury. Then I think maybe next week, say against obviously Peterhead in the Cup, it could be a good chance to give him his first start in a while. Obviously that'd be him going back to his previous club as well, so he might want that. But that's looking much further ahead for me. I think I'd be keeping the same lineup. Same formation, no messing about with that. Stick with it as it was against Inverness.
I am going to put Savory back in for me. Thomas out on the left, Savory out on the right. Still think he's one of the best players at the club. And I just think that he will offer us a few more cutting-edge moments, because he can have quiet games, but there's usually something in there that goes good. But defensively, I'm happy to keep the same lineup. Right back's always going to be a sort of debatable position, but Davidson did well, at least going forward. And yeah, you can't chuck Fox out. You just can't. He might, but you can't.
Yeah, it was interesting actually, because I felt like, I don't know what your thoughts are on this, right? But see in Coyle's post game interview, considering how great Fox was, I thought he was still a wee bit nitpicky about his performance. Like, he did, he gave him credit for it, but there was an element of what he said that made me think he's somehow unconvinced. I don't know. Considering how positive Coyle generally is after games, even when we don't win, he's always got a lot of good things to say. And Charlie Fox came in for the first time since that Thistle game. I was expecting him to be absolutely glowing with praise, but it wasn't quite that. I mean, he actually, like I said earlier on, he called him out for the offside, for example, and he doesn't usually do that. So, I don't know. I'm not entirely sure what to expect. I'd be really disappointed if Fox did get dropped, though.
I actually agree with you on that. I was quite surprised, because the guy that was doing the interviews, he kind of set him up to sort of bound him with praise, and he shut that down pretty quickly. Maybe that's him wanting to keep Fox focused, or I don't know if there's any mind games going on there, or if he's just trying to set the tone for his intentions going forward. But yeah, I thought it was a wee bit prickly, considering it was his first game back and the impact that he had on it.
In terms of a score prediction, Callum, let's update our table. Did any of us have 2-1 last week?
No, I was raging. I thought I did, but I definitely didn't. I had 2-0. You had 3-1, David, Enzo. You had 1-0, so we managed to get everything in between. So everybody gets a point, and Enzo, that gives you, you're almost at double figures now, so that's you up to 9 points. David, you're at 12, and I am on 11. So Enzo, you can go first.
Yeah, I am going to predict 3-0 Queens on Saturday.
Oof.
I just really fancy it. And listen, I might be coming back on here next week with my head and my hands going off. What was I thinking? But yeah, I fancy it. I just have a really good feeling. I think there was a lot of positivity on the back of that game on Saturday against Inverness. Murray scoring, Fox back in, the general overall play. And I expect us to carry over with a bit of momentum going forward. And I'm actually feeling really positive about the next few games. So yeah, I'm going to go for 3-0. I fancy Murray, Savory, and I was going to say Fox, assuming he starts. No, he's not going to score again. Murray, Savory, and Tommy Robson.
Ooh, getting his, what, that would be what, his third of the season, would it be?
Would I? His first not against Thistle.
All right, 3-0. That's ambitious. I like it. I like it. I am less ambitious, so I'm going to go for the exact same result as the game against Inverness. I'm going to go for 2-1 Queens. I am going to put Savory scoring one and Thomas getting a goal. He looked good last week, and I don't see any reason that he won't cause them all kinds of bother. So yeah, I'm going for 2-1.
All right, I will take 3-1. It was 1-0. I'm not really sure I see the clean sheet again going through to Kirkcaldy, but I also just want us to score a couple of goals again, and or at least, well, I want us to score 3 goals, and I want us just to have another good attacking performance and yeah, carry on that good form from last week. And as Enzo says, also feeling pretty confident about the run of games coming up. It should be a chance where we can really, really go for it and put some goals in across a few different competitions and sort of show what we are all about. So yeah, let's start it here. 3-1 Queens. It's going to be Murray, it's going to be Thomas, and Jack Thompson is finally going to score. Finally.
He gives himself enough chances, doesn't he? Into good positions at the edge of the box.
Getting closer and closer. As he hit the post right at the end of the Inverness game. This week has got to be the week where he scores. So yeah, give me Thompson as well. 3-1 Queens. All that remains now, well, I'll tell you what, we'll have a little look at what we think is going to come up this week in the Championship in general. So let's run through the fixtures very quickly. You've got Cove at home to Morton, Dundee, Hamilton, Inverness, Ayr, could be a good one there, and Partick Thistle, Arbroath. Let's start with the trickiest one to call for me right now out of those, which is Partick Thistle versus Arbroath, quite frankly, because I think at any other point in this, any other month so far this season, it would have been an easy choice. But Thistle losing 5 in a row, and Arbroath, I mean, obviously still struggling, but draw against Cove last week, could they sneak a wee result away to Thistle in Glasgow?
I mean, he really is in sackable territory, isn't he? Ian McCall, if Thistle lose this, I mean, he's in sackable territory right now, but you can't... If Arbroath win that, then that's him kind of 5 points away from Thistle, and suddenly Thistle really are looking downwards in the table as opposed to up. So, can they sneak a result? Yes, anyone can sneak a result in this league. Nobody is infinitely better than the other sides, especially in that sort of middle pack. So I think there's every chance that Arbroath do produce something. A couple of draws in the last few games. Cove, we've seen that they dispatched us pretty comfortably. So I think there's every chance that they pull off a sneaky wee result.
I don't know what's going to happen with the Thistle Arbroath game, but I kind of hope McCall stays for at least another few weeks regardless, because they've got a real banana skin in the Scottish Cup. The following week, they've got Kelty Hearts at home. Now, I know Kelty haven't taken to life in League One as well as what a lot of people would have predicted, but that's a really tricky game. Like, that's the kind of upset you could definitely see happening in the Cup. So, I want them to hang around for that, because I could see something quite funny happening there.
You were very close last week with your bold prediction, Enzo, of Hamilton getting something off of Ayr, and I mean, quite frankly, they should have last week. The game was on the telly on Friday night. They were almost, well, I say excellent. I think they were excellent. I think they definitely deserved. I think they deserved the win. They came up against Deepo Akinyemi, and you can't gift him certainly the first goal that they did. Then he obviously conceded a late penalty as well. Do you think Hamilton can go and take something off Dundee this week?
Absolutely not. No, I think Dundee will hammer them. But to be fair, if I were an Accies fan, I would have been quite frustrated after that Ayr game, which, by the way, was very entertaining. I don't know if both of you watched it, but I thought it was a really good watch. I just think that the defending was really slack, and Hamilton had so many opportunities to put the ball in the back of the net that they just didn't take, and that is what cost them in the end. I mean, they should have come away with at least a point, and I'm a wee bit annoyed that they didn't, obviously, because then my prediction would have come off. But no, I don't fancy them to go to Dundee. Dundee are starting to play, they're starting to build a bit of momentum, and I think Dundee will dispatch them quite comfortably, to be honest.
And of course, what we have to look forward to over the next few weeks as well is the World Cup. I mean, I'm a big advocate of, I love international football, like I love Scotland games, and I've always enjoyed the Euros, and I always enjoy World Cups. You've obviously got a lot of, you know, the issues, shall we say. I think that's putting it unbelievably politely. I'm not looking to get overly political, but I think we're all well aware of the shambolic reasons as to why Qatar perhaps has this in the first place. And of course, we all see the kind of state that Qatar is in general in terms of their laws and everything like that, which is their country at the end of the day, but we can all disagree with it and say that it's a bit mental, and should a World Cup really be there? But a World Cup is coming up. We're starting this Sunday with the mouth-watering tie of Qatar versus Ecuador. Are you both looking forward to that?
I didn't even realise that that was happening, like, almost. And I didn't realise it was so soon. I knew the World Cup was coming up, but when I was talking about it the weekend, I didn't realise that the first game was actually on Sunday coming. No, couldn't care less. And I love the World Cup as well. I'm a big fan of international football, similar to you, David, and do enjoy it. But it's just weird, isn't it? Like, it's just not the time for an international tournament. It's grim outside. I mean, not that it's always particularly nice in Scottish summers, but dark, it's wet, and we're right in the midst of our club season. And I mean, obviously Scotland not being in it doesn't help with it, but usually I see the international tournaments during the summer as a wee bit of a nice break point from club football, and you can pass the time that way. But it just kind of feels like it's an unnecessary addition for me at this point. But I mean, I'll still watch it.
I'll probably have the games on when I'm working, given that I work from home, still I'll have it on just in the background for the sake of it. But I can't pretend that I'm particularly excited or that there's any games that stand out or that I've picked at a team that I'm going to be backing. I know a lot of people have picked a favourite that they're going to sort of be pretending to support, because that's quite a common thing to do. I don't care. And it's not so much the Qatar element of it, which obviously is very problematic for a whole host of reasons. It's the fact that it is across winter when Queens are still going to be playing. Like, I've always been a much bigger fan of club football than international football. I like going to Scotland games too, and I like when there's a World Cup on in the summer. But when a World Cup's on in the summer, the element of that I enjoy is getting out to a beer garden and watching a couple of games. And when I've still get Queens games every Saturday, and it's pretty miserable outside, and it's just, it doesn't feel like a World Cup. And to be completely honest with you, I don't care.
It definitely, for us, we're very glad that Queen's Park are doing pretty well in the league, and, you know, still performing well, putting on good shows. I do agree with you. I am much more interested in how Queen's Park are going to be getting on every week than watching the likes of Japan versus Costa Rica, or what else have we got here? I'm just scrolling through the list right. There's the first round of games. So you've got Qatar, Ecuador. That one, that I said, is a few weeks away, but Qatar, Ecuador, then the first full day. I mean, it's not bad if you're working from home, Enzo, as you say. You've got England versus Iran at 1 o'clock, Senegal, the Netherlands at 4 o'clock, USA, Wales at 7 o'clock. And then after that, I think you've got four games a day, one starting at 10 o'clock in the morning as well. For the work from home crowd, I think it's going to be a nice distraction. But yeah, overall, I'm the exact same as you. I'm kind of struggling a little bit to get up for it, but I'm hoping that will change when the tournament kicks off.
Oh, we'll see.
We certainly shall, but we will be focusing, of course, on Queen's Park, and we will be back next week to discuss what happens in Kirkcaldy this coming Saturday. And, of course, next week, well, maybe we'll start coming down with a little bit of cup fever before then, because the Scottish Cup is always a good one. Obviously, next week we will be away to Peterhead. We'll be previewing that and, of course, discussing everything and anything else that happens with Queen's Park in the next few days. Calum and Enzo, it's been a pleasure as always, and thank you very much to everybody for listening. Of course, as always, find us on social media, on Twitter, for as long as Twitter exists. It seems Elon Musk is intent on burning it to the ground, but we will be there for as long as it exists at Spiders Talk Pod. And of course, we'll be on Pie and Bovril on all the threads relating to Queen's Park. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you all again next week.
See you later.
Cheers for listening.
Play for the sake of the game.